one of the great things about having a home group is that I get a chance to watch men get sober. Men taught me how to get sober at Sons of Serenity. And watching sober men go through their lives, no matter what comes up, loss, death, loss of a loved one, job change, the life things that happen after we get sober, I have the pleasure and honor of watching men walk through those things. About 5 years, our speaker tonight was going through something in his life, and I watched him keep showing up every Monday night, keep sharing, keep being honest with men, sharing his life, sharing his heart with people. And I admired that. Lost track of Bill for a couple of years. Going through something that I sure was similar in my life last year, I was thinking to myself, I've got to find where Bill is. And in the midst of some spiritual and emotional anguish, one day a friend of mine said, come down to this men's meeting Saturday morning down in Buckhead. I said, okay. And got there, the room was full of men, and I grabbed a cup of coffee, looked to join my friend, and there was one empty chair in that room of 80 men, and it was right next to Bill. My first sponsor told me there are no coincidences in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have come to believe that. After that meeting that day, Bill spent 3 hours in the parking lot of that church with me, sharing his experience and his strength and his hope. And since then, he's become very close to me. He's somebody I talk to often, seek counsel from. Because again, he's teaching me how to live sober. And with that, I give you Bill M.
Hey, everybody. My name is Bill Michaels, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Joel, for those kind words. It sounds like maybe I was doing a good thing, and I guess I was, but I was really there taking care of myself, you know, because it's either do things that we do in this program, like help others or die. That's what it comes down to for me. So, you know, Joel thinks that I was completely altruistic, you know, standing out there. But the truth is, it takes care of me, you know. It fills my heart up, and it takes care of me, and it keeps me sane. So he's as much a gift to me as I am to him. You know, I can't believe I'm here tonight, and the fact that what alcoholic would be in here in a mental institute on Friday night? I mean, you got to be kidding me. I spoke once here about 4 years or so ago when this room was smaller. But it occurred to me, I went to about 26 different schools when I was going K through 12 because I moved a lot and stuff like that. But at one point, I went to Wheeler High School for a short period of time over here in Marietta. However, you know, I had a problem with alcohol and drugs, so they said they would rather I not go there anymore. And I thought, that's fine. I don't like it here anyway. So there used to be an elementary or middle school or something over here I forget the name of it, but it was for all us challenged kids. And I remember driving over there the first day, you know, I was pissed off, and I saw the sign for Ridgeview. And I remember thinking, yeah, that's where all those crazy people are. You know, I had no idea I would ever be here. Now I come here, I've been here at meetings, I've talked, I've been to dances, and my doctor's in the building right behind us. I knew there was something about that when I looked at that sign. But I also, while I was going to that school, I was drinking real heavy, which I normally did, and I had a Buick, 66 Buick Skylark, and I, at one point in time, I was drunk as I could be, and you know, I wasn't going to go over there either. So I'm driving around looking for something. I don't know what I'm looking for. And I remember just before I blacked out, racing down South Cobb Drive, putting it into a power slide, and I just got out and left. I just left it in the middle of the road. And that's the kind of stuff that my alcoholism did to me. And, you know, I belong here, essentially. I haven't told my story in a couple of years, so who knows what you're going to get. I think sobriety for me today, you know, it used to be before I got here, getting physically sober. And then about 4 or 5 months into sobriety, I realized, oh, it's about emotional sobriety. Oh, slow on the uptake. And I think these days, it's about my spiritual sobriety. And, you know, I didn't have any spirit when I was out there drinking. I was insane. You know, I was full of fear and full of rage. And, you know, I treated that with drugs and alcohol, and it was, watch out. I don't, there's no telling. And, by the way, I love you guys. I'm glad you're here tonight. I guess I'll start out with what it was like and tell you some of the things that I did that will qualify me to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I moved here from California at about 8. I started resenting everything and everything at that time because I think I was alcoholic from the beginning, and I see a friend of mine, and you know, I got here, and I wasn't supposed to be here. I was supposed to be in California. I was a beach kid. You know, I wasn't supposed to be here in the South. You people talked funny and everything else. You know, I didn't want to be here, and I know now that it was just my alcoholism. You know, I lived my life contempt prior to investigation. That sums me up. I had contempt for everything, and it just didn't work, you know, trying to live a regular life and being full of contempt. So about 13, while I was here, me and a friend of mine decided to drink, but we had no idea what we're doing. So we get a bottle of Boone's Farm, six pack of beer, we go out in this field next to the skating rink. We just, I don't know, drinking in about 5 minutes. We didn't know how to drink or anything about it. And we went over to the skating rink, blacked out, passed out. And the tale I was told the next day is that we were taken to his mom's house. And, you know, we puked our guts out, bile, and all that good stuff. And, you know, I remember the next day thinking, damn, we didn't get that right. That didn't work. And but I want to be a man, and so I'm going to figure out how to drink like a man. And must have been the next week or two. Another weekend, we grabbed a fifth of Bacardi 151, I think it was. And we sat next to this Tri-City Real Estate when those used to be around. And I think we drank that in about 20 minutes. So needless to say, we didn't know what we were doing, but we drank alcoholically. We had that part down. And we went across the street, went into the skating rink, and I think the story goes, I just fell flat on my face. Never moved. Now, the sad part was, his mother came and got him, took him home. The police took me to jail. And that was my, that's the way it started, and that's kind of the way it went from there on. And, I just thought that I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's what it was. And I was mad at his mom for not taking care of me. And, it would just continue on like that. I, at 16, I took that same Buick that I got back, and there used to be some base housing over by the Big Chicken. I was at a party drinking Hunch Punch and taking Quaaludes. That's a good mix. And I don't know, the story goes, because a lot of times I don't remember because I black out. And the story goes, we're doing 70, 80, 90 miles an hour on a 25-mile-an-hour curve. So we hit a Chevelle, put the bumper in the trunk, and sent that into four more cars. And I got up and walked away. And I don't remember that. Next thing I remember was the blue lights. And the cop said, son, were you just in a wreck? And I said, no, sir, but there's a wreck down there. And because my brain couldn't function. So obviously they immediately arrested me. And, but here's my higher power taking care of me that I didn't know whether it existed or not. There was a witness, supposedly, and when they brought the witness to jail to identify me, she said, no, that's not him. And so nobody got hurt, thank God, and that was it, and I walked. And, I always thought I was just really good, and it didn't have anything to do with that. And that's just the way it went, I kept doing that, drinking, doing drugs, mostly drinking. I mean, when it comes down to it, I want to have another drink. And 18 years old, I had my first DUI at UGA. And I was just angry about that, just pissed off. They were doing me wrong, blah, blah, blah. And, it was just the way it continually went. And I was constantly, thinking that something happened where I was always in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I'd get in trouble, I'd cause a big mess, and I'd go sweep it up as fast as I could and get it all fixed up so I could go back to doing what I wanted to do. And, it always eventually something happened again. And I thought, damn, why is it always me? And, I didn't know it at the time. I didn't understand it, but there was always something wrong inside. I never felt okay. Something was just off. And, I just thought that's the way it was. And so I went, carried on, and doing the same old stuff and drinking. And I thought that's what life was about. You drink hard and you play hard. And I have to back up at one a little bit. I grew up with my mom, single mom, and my dad wasn't around, and I didn't know where he was or where he had been. And I had asked a number of times if my mom knew, and she said no. And it always hurt, how we are hypersensitive. So I always wanted to know, and other kids would ask, and I'd say, I don't know. And they'd say, oh, you're lying, And I'd say, no, I really don't know. So I always carried this with me. At 13, I went down and went through my mom's stuff, and I found a box with a bunch of stuff from them. And so I confronted her, and I wasn't too happy about it. And the long and short of that is we ended up going out to California, and I ended up visiting with him for a couple weeks. And, that was the greatest thing that had ever happened to me at that point, because now I finally knew what my dad looked like. I knew who he was. I got to spend a little bit of time with him. As I say that, I forgot to mention, if I keep doing what we do a day at a time in October, I'll be 13 years sober. And that's a testament to this program, to you guys, and to the higher power that I didn't know anything about. Because a drunk like me doesn't get sober. No way, no how, not for a year, not, it just, it doesn't happen. Like I've always heard, we end up dead or in jail. And I've come close to the dead part, and I've done the jail part a number of times. So to be here tonight is just amazing for me, to be sober this long and to be here and be happy about it. Anyway, I came back. I tried to stay in touch. It didn't happen. My dad faded away. He's alcoholic like I am, at least I believe he was. Going on about my business, we ended up in Chicago, my mom and I. And I decided at 16 I'd like to go live with him, get to know him. So I got in touch with him. My mom said, okay, that's what you want to do. I went out, back out to California, San Diego, met him, met up with him again, and lived there for about 3 months. But he lived with an alcoholic woman. She, the long and short of it was she threatened me a few times, and I told her that probably wasn't a good idea because I wasn't going to stand for it. So she told certain stories to my dad. He threatened to kill me, and I decided it was a good time to leave. And so I came back to where my mom was. We moved back down here. I kept drinking, drugging, and like I said, I had DUI at 18. That's what my life was about, gambling, drinking, drugging, chasing women. The catching wasn't always that good, but I like to chase them anyway. And so I'm out at a poker game way out in Dallas when it was sticks and there was nothing out there except for a few people with chicken coops. And we used to like to drink and do coke and smoke dope and party all night and play poker and tell lies and stuff like that. And I got this phone call, and Carol said, it's for you. And I'm thinking, nobody knows I'm here. That's why I come here. And it's my mom. And she said, are you okay to drive? And I knew at that point, I said, my dad's dead, isn't he? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, what happened? She said, he killed himself. And, I was crushed. Anyway, so I ended up going out to Reno. He had died in Carson City. I went out to Reno. And I was just out of it. So I really turned up the heat and drinking around the clock and really just wanted to die. And I remember we went to the viewing, and everybody went by and looked, and then I went by, and I was just out of my mind. I remember looking at him for a while, and then I started to, I've told this before, I started to pick up his hand and then his arm, and this rage started to come out. I wanted to grab him by the chest and pull him off and just start to tear him apart. And the rest of the family are there kind of nervous about that. And so they pulled me away. And then I just went on a drinking binge for about a month. And all I could think about was shooting myself. Anyway, I stayed there for about a month. And we went and I got the ashes afterwards. And I wanted to just dump them on the ground, and my uncle said, that probably wouldn't be a good idea. And so I carried them around in my suitcase for a month. And, because I just didn't know how to deal with it. Anyway, I ended up getting out to Riverside where he's buried. I left it with my aunt and said, I can't bury him. I got to go. I can't do this anymore. So I came back to Georgia, kept my drinking and drugging up and all that kind of stuff. Spent a year trying to die. And then I finally decided, enough of that. About 22, I joined the Navy. And because I stopped doing the drugs voluntarily but I wasn't going to quit drinking because I'm a true alcoholic and I like to drink. And so I went and joined the Navy. And I figured, you know, I can drink like a sailor, you know, and that'll be cool. And I can do that all, you know, I can do that all around the world, and I'll have lots of good stories, and, you know, I'll be a man. And, you know, because I always had that empty hole inside my soul, and so I was trying to find ways to fill it. And so I did that, drank, did the deal. Eventually ended up with 4 DUIs. Thank God I never did hurt anybody. But, you know, it's a pain in the butt to clean up DUI after DUI and totaled car after totaled car. And it's just difficult. It's exhausting to do that stuff. But, you know, I couldn't stop it. I just kept doing what we do. If you're alcoholic like I am, you just keep drinking and it's just not that bad, or I'll fix it, or, you know, I'll try to do it this way. I'll take a taxi cab to the bar. I won't drive. And it never worked. And so I just kept on keeping on. I knew I was going to kill somebody in a blackout. It never did happen, thankfully. But, you know, I kept going to jail. I didn't enjoy that very much. And, you know, eventually friends and stuff stopped bailing me out, you know. And I remember toward the end of my drinking, when I called all my buddies and they were all busy, you know, I realized that a little bit that, you know, there was a problem, and there might be a problem. And, you know, I did a lot of deployments with the Navy. I was helicopter crewman, and I have to share this. We came back from a cruise into Hawaii. First thing we do, we get off the boat, we start drinking, right? Start drinking, eating pizza. It's only 12 o'clock, but so what? And we want to get a good drunk going before we go into Waikiki, and so we did. And then we get in there, keep pouring it on. I don't know, I must have left out of there about midnight, drunk out of my mind, blacking out. And next thing I remember, something, had some argument, ran up some stairs. Everything was fuzzy. Next thing I know, I was midair leaping over a second story balcony. And all of a sudden I woke up thinking, oh shit, this is gonna hurt. and it did, you know. It separated my shoulder, broke my wrist in 3 places. And what I did is what I always did. I'm going to get up, F you, and keep on trucking. And the problem was every time I got up, I kept collapsing. So they came and got me. After that, I blacked out again. And I come next morning, I wake up, I got all the hoses down my throat and everywhere else. And, you know, I'm being told that I was belligerent and I wouldn't let them help me for about 3 or 4 hours. And they decided, you know, leave him alone, eventually he'll collapse. And I did, and that's when they started putting me back together. And that was the way it was. And they, you know, they sent somebody up to talk to me about alcoholism. They thought maybe I might have alcoholism. I'm like, you know, get out of here. But they, I remember I woke up, my left side, I couldn't move. I thought, you know, I might be dying. I remember asking the nurse, you know, what's wrong with me? She wouldn't tell me. I thought, oh, shit, this is bad. And, but that's where alcoholism took me. And I forgot to mention, 22, I got married. I actually took a hostage. I didn't get married. And, you know, because I was full of fear, and even though she was more than willing to stay with me, I wanted to make sure that she didn't get away, so I married her. And we went on to have a daughter. When I found out she was pregnant, I went out and got another DUI because I have no life skills. I don't know how to deal with these things. And so, you know, that's just how it was. That's just the way it went. And I always kept thinking, you know, why can't I get this right? Why can't I work this out? And But, you know, I had a lot of stubbornness, a lot of willfulness, so I just kept at it, you know, kept trying to make it work. And, you know, I kept up my drinking. When I was probably about 26 and a half or something like that when that balcony incident happened, and they said, well, you know, you need to go talk to somebody. We're going to evaluate you. I'm like, evaluate me? I don't think so. But I went anyway, you know, get to check in the block and try to, you know, well, I only did this much, blah, blah, blah. And they said, no, you need to go be evaluated over at medical. So I went over there, and this pregnant nurse said, she talked to me for about 30 seconds. She said, you're an alcoholic. I thought I was going to kill her. I mean, I was coming unglued, and except for the fact that I might go to jail for the rest of my life, I would have. And because you can't tell me anything. I know everything, and I don't need your help. And so I went to treatment in the military at Miramar, and, you know, I started to hear some of this stuff that we talk about. And there was this one Marine I remember who was just, I mean, he was buff, and he was razor sharp, and he said he was an alcoholic. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. There's no way. This guy looks awesome. And for a second there, I had a chance to get sober, and I was like, nah. And I remember being there, and this other guy came up to me. He worked there, a counselor, and he gave me the big book. I don't know what it was. And he said, I want you to read the first 164 pages and report back to me when you get done. And, you know, I'm angry as I can be, and I look at it, and I'm like, the thing doesn't even have a damn title. You know, it's kind of book is this, you know? And I'm like, read the first 164 pages. Doesn't he want me to read the whole book? I can read the whole book. And, I was so full of rage, I couldn't stand it. And I remember at that moment thinking, it's going to talk about God in this book. I know it is. I just know it is. And that was my worst fear. And I opened it up, and I know I must have opened it up to We Agnostics. And it just didn't have God in there one time. It's like all over the page, and it's all over the next page. And I turned the next page, and I thought, God damn it, no way, I can't do this. And I really, truly felt like I would rather lose a limb than be an alcoholic. And, you know, I still had a condo and a wife and a brand new truck and da-da-da-da and all this stuff. And there's no way I'm an alcoholic. I still got all this stuff. It didn't matter that, you know, I'd done this balcony thing and she was divorcing me and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I had a chance of losing my job, and, you know, that I didn't look at that part. Seems like this disease keeps us from looking at the truth, and keeps us living in the lie. So I did that. And I celebrated by going, when we got done with that, I think it was a 6-week program, by going bowling, getting drunk. And so I didn't have to put up with that shit anymore. And, you know, that was the way it went. At the end, what happened was I was in Monterey. We got off the ship and we went into town, and what are we going to do? We're going to drink. But not me. I'm white knuckling it by this time, because I know that bad things happen when I drink. I know that if I take a drink, I can't tell you where it's going to go. That's where it came to eventually. So I was thinking, how do I do this? You know, I'm not a member of AA. And this old timer who was trying to sponsor me said, you know, when you get there, first thing you do, call AA Central, find out where a meeting is, ask somebody to come get you. And I'm like, yeah, right. And I remember, I knew he was right, but I couldn't do it. And I went and stood in this corner, I remember, for about 3 hours in my head, trying to figure out whether I was going to drink or not. And I went round and round and round with, you know, if I drink, you know, all hell's going to break loose. And, you know, I can't drink. And, yeah, I can do anything I want. But anyway, I went around for 3 hours, and the final decision was I'm going to go take a drink. So I did. I went and had some Mexican food, had a beer, and I knew this is a bad idea. And the long and short of it was I drank for 3 days. On the last night that we drank, I was in a bar called the Mucky Duck, and got polluted. It was closing time, and I told them I didn't like their closing time. I wasn't leaving. And I don't remember that. That's what they tell me. And then a couple of my buddies in my air detachment tried to help me, and then next thing you know, I had some racial slurs and some not too kind words for them. Wanted to fight with them and stuff. So then they called the police, and the police kindly took me back to the pier, and they left. And so about that time, I told Shore Patrol what they could do, and I went back into town. A few hours later, I came back in another police car, all beat up, you know, blood down my face and stuff. I don't remember. I must have had a good time. But I got on that ship. I don't remember getting back to the ship, and I came out of it about 6 in the morning. I came to, and I was shivering and sweating. I think I had diarrhea. I just, I felt like all hell. And I remember, I don't know if any of you guys can relate this, but I remember that feeling, oh shit, I've done it again. And I, you know, it was like the four horsemen all rode in, I was done. And I thought, I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this. I remember thinking, it was a thought, but it was a prayer to the God I didn't know that said, help me get sober or let me die. Because I can't live like this. I can't do this anymore. And I've been sober since that day. I think that's when I hit my bottom. I surrendered. All of those magical things happen when you get to the bottom. You get willing. And so I think I laid in my rack for the next couple of days on the way back to San Diego, and I shook. And I had taken my big book with me, and I slept with my big book on the way back because I thought, you know, this is my only hope or I'll have to die. And, you know, I started walking the walk and doing what people do. And so that's what it was like, and that's what happened. What it's like now was I met a guy. I was kind of white-knuckling it for a while, looking for a sponsor. I got to a point that probably 3 or 4 months, I was struggling real bad, and I asked this guy, this old-timer that was trying to help me, what do I do, because he wouldn't sponsor me anymore. And he said, you know, pray about it, go to meetings, and listen, and somebody will tell your story. And so I did that for a little while, and I didn't hear my story. I thought, man, I'm in trouble. And then I went to this one meeting one night, Lemon Grove, a speaker's meeting, and Lamar R. told his story, and it was my story, and I was blown away. I almost started to cry, but, you know, it wouldn't have been too manly, so I sucked it up. And but I followed him to the parking lot, and I said, would you sponsor me? And he said, it would be an honor and a privilege. I almost passed out. I couldn't believe it. I was scared he was going to say, no, get out of here. And I started walking the walk with Lamar, and he saved my butt. And because I had no idea how to live, I was completely bankrupt, completely insane. And, you know, I just didn't have anywhere else to go. It was at the last house. And so he said, this is what we're going to start doing, you know. And he gave me a lowdown. You're going to call me every day. You're going to pray in the morning. You're going to pray at night. Da, 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 da. And that's what we started doing. And he said, we're going to work the steps. And, you know, step four had kept me out, because I came around his program for 5.5 years and couldn't get it because I wasn't done. You know, we started doing it. And I remember I got to the fourth step, and I thought, oh, man, I know I've got to do this, but I can't do this. And there's a big roundup in San Diego, and I went to it. I remember asking him, are you going? And he looked at me like, what, are you stupid? Of course I'm going. You know, that was how clueless I was about AA or anything. So I'm going up the escalator. There's 5,000 drunks at this thing. I get to the top of the escalator. Who's standing there? My sponsor. Have you done the four step yet? It hasn't even, you know, the weekend hasn't even gotten started yet, and he's already on me about it. Oh, God. And, but I made a commitment that when the roundup was over, I would go home and I would get in a quiet place and I'd unplug the phone and lock the door and pull the shades, and I would sit there until it was complete. And that's what I did, because I knew if I don't do that four step and the fifth step and keep going, I'm going to die. And so I went to his house, and we spent a Friday and a Saturday. I think we spent about 13 or 14 hours, and I got all that poison out of my system. And that was the most amazing, one of the most amazing moments in AA for me, was because I started to feel okay, you know. And he said, "You're in now. You're in." And I thought, maybe I have a chance. And, you know, I just kept walking the walk with him and with the winners and the people that knew how to stay sober. Even when they told me stuff, I thought, how's that going to work? How's that going to help me? And I can't begin to tell you all the things that have transpired in my sobriety. There was an old saying that said, you know, write down everything you want, and in 5 years, take a look at that list. If I would have even tried, I would have been so sure it's not even funny. And, you know, it's just been an amazing ride. It's unbelievable. I have to go back and tell you another story, just for grins, that hit me. At one point in time toward the end of my alcoholism, I said, that's it, I quit. I just quit. I wasn't going back to work in the Navy. I wasn't going to do anything. I had always tried to be responsible. I'm not doing anything. I quit. I'm leaving. So I got my Jeep. I drank. I drove, started driving east, and I woke up in the mountains the next day, because I guess I'd blacked out and decided parking in the mountains was a good place to be. And I got up the next morning, got some more beer, local store, kept driving east, and that was Arizona, then Mexico, and then back into the States, I think. And the next thing I know, I came out of blackout, and I was stuck in the mud. Well, that pissed me off. So I jumped out of my Jeep to lock in the hubs. I walked out of my boots. That pissed me off. I took the boots, threw them in the back of the Jeep, jumped back in, drove off, went back into the blackout. The next thing you know, I came out of the blackout, and I'm launching at about 50 off the side of a canal in Arizona. It's about 60, 70 feet wide. It came out of the blackout, and I had that same thought, oh, shit, this is going to hurt. And hit the other side. Jeep dropped down in the center of the canal, and I was still moving. Took the seatbelt off, saw blood coming down. My chin was hanging down here. It looked like a wildcat had done this to my face. I jump out of the Jeep. It's about 120 out there. It's hot. I'm up to here in the water, and I'm going, man, I got to get to hospital. I got to get some help. You know, I'm bleeding here pretty bad. But I'm so used to doing that and having to fix myself and go to the emergency room and get patched up, no big deal, you know. And so I get out. I don't have any boots on, remember. I run up the bank. I get up to the top of the bank. My feet are burning, 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 burning. So I'm like, what the hell I do? I run back down into the canal where the water is. What the hell am I going to do? I can't stay down here. I'm bleeding. So I go back up. I get up there, I'm burning up. So what I do, I start taking my clothes off because I'm burning up. I've been polluted for a couple of days, you know. So I take all my clothes off. Now I'm in my underwear. I'm still burning up. That didn't work. But I know I can't go back down in the water because I'm bleeding. I'll bleed to death. And so I start looking across the field, and I see this little house way across this field. So I start walking. Well, they had cut the hay. So the hay's jabbing through my feet. Yeah, it's the same old stuff. I mean, it's like climbing barbed wire fences when you're trying to make it back from Mexico and you're in trouble and all that kind of shit. You know, all that stuff we used to do. And so I get about halfway across the field, and here comes an ambulance. And the ambulance, you know, you would think you'd say, oh, man, an ambulance, fantastic. I'm like, you know, all of a sudden my contempt get away from me. Then the state patrol comes and says, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. I'm like, oh, I've done it the hard way. I'll get in. And But, I mean, that's just my insanity. That's my alcoholism. So I think I qualify. And that's just a couple of the fun times that I had. But getting back to the sobriety, you know, I was bankrupt in every area. I lost my career in the military. I don't have a driver's license. I haven't had one for 5 years at this point. The state of California doesn't want me to drive. You know, I'm going bankrupt. My house is being taken. I mean, the only thing I have is my physical health. And, you know, thankfully. But I just started doing what we do, and I was okay. I had nothing, but I was okay. And, you know, working the steps, going to meetings, 7, 9, 10 meetings a week, doing on service work at 3 or 4 meetings, going with my sponsor. He used to speak a lot in Southern California, going with him. And, you know, all that stuff they used to tell me, if you'll just get sober, it'll be okay. If you'll just quit drinking, you'll be okay. And it was happening. And in order to stay in and finish my time in the military, they said, we got to send you back to treatment. So I went back, and that time when I went back, I spent the whole time trying to help those guys. I said, I was here 5 years ago. And so I got to get back and try to be of service. And I just kept doing what we do. I got a call from Lamar once, and he said, I just spoke up here in L.A., and I met a lady, and she said, my son's in Mexico, and he needs help. And I told her I know the guy that – I know a guy that'll go down there and help her. So he gives me a call and says, you need to go down to Rosarita Beach and see if you can help this guy. So I go down there, and this lady's distraught, you know, and she goes, well, her and her friend and myself, we go down there. And he's living in a shack on the beach with a bunch of homeless, probably alcoholics from Mexico, locals. And his mind is gone. And she had said to me, you know, he used to like to surf. So maybe you can talk to him about that. So I did a little bit, and you could see a little glimmer in his eye of the person that used to be. And I gave him my phone number and a meeting schedule. And, you know, he didn't want to come back with us. So I left, and, you know, and he stayed there. That's where alcoholism takes us. That's where it takes me. He stayed there because he was okay with that. So he could drink the way he wanted to drink. Just so many things that I got to try and be of service and help other people. And what I found out was my soul was completely broken. You know, I had no pieces left. And when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys said, do these things. And I realized the pieces started being put back together, a piece at a time. And I got my soul back, got my spirit back. And, you know, now it's about keeping that spirit healthy and taking care of myself. And I get that by coming here. You know, I got told a week or so ago about this, and every so often my head's going, okay, what am I going to say? It's like, oh, God, stop. And I have to pray about it and just say, hey, God, help me with the word so that maybe I might be able to help somebody by something that I share. I can't begin to tell you all of the things that I did alcoholically, and I can't begin to tell you all the blessings that have come in sobriety, but I will tell you this. A guy like me does not want to be sober, does not want to be here, would never be here, no way in hell, and I'm here and I'm happy about it. And it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me when I quit drinking and asked for help, and that was also the hardest thing I ever did, was to ask for help. And my life is, there are no words. I have to tell you about another part of my sobriety. About 7 years, prior to that, I've been working with my sponsor a lot. And through the course of another bad relationship and late stage alcoholism, I had a son that was born about 2 pounds, 2 ounces. His mother's crazy, you know. Have to be with me. And so anyway, long story short, she's gone, she's got him. I haven't seen him in 10 years. And so that hurt a lot, and I tended to be depressed in sobriety. And, you know, what I thought was, I'm just not working hard enough in this program, you know, more spiritual work. And I'm already doing 9 meetings a week, and I sponsor a bunch of guys, and I'm sponsored, and I pray all the time, and I read literature, and I've got lots of service commitments, and I'm going, I'm just not working hard enough in AA. And, you know, my sponsor said, you know, you got a good program. I'm not a doctor, but I think you might have depression. And I thought, considered it, slept on it. Nah. And, you know, but every once in a while I ended up in the parking lot of a gun shop, but, you know, wanting to shoot myself because I've got a number of years of sobriety and I can't get rid of this pain. And, but I fought that for about 3 or 4 years, and he, every once in a while he'd say it again. He'd say, you know, I think you might have depression. Why don't you go get it checked out? And, nah. So, you know, I spent some days face down in the carpet praying, trying to get through this pain. And I don't want to share this for anybody who's suffering from depression, because it doesn't get talked about a whole lot in the meetings I go to in AA. About 7 years sober, I had a relationship in sobriety. I had learned to not treat women poorly, and I had treated them all equally and as loving children of God. And so I had spent about 40 years on my own and just taking care of myself and waiting for God to present a relationship if I was supposed to have one. Because when I did them, it was, you know, a lot of bad things, you know, abortions, VD, you know, lots of bad stuff. So I had this really great relationship. It broke off, and I went into the worst depression that I had ever had, and all I could think of was to go die. And I got in a car, and I drove north. I went through Chattanooga, ended up in Alabama in a gun shop, and I went to go in. They were closed due to some holiday or some shit. And, you know, in my mind, I thought, God doing for me what I can't do for myself. But at the same time, I was thinking, damn. And anyway, I thought, well, I'll go back to Kennesaw where my home was, and I'll go down to Galleon's, and I'll pick up that Remington that they said that was real, that 45 they said was real dependable. And, I mean, I was in a bad place, worse than any time I'd ever been in alcoholism. And because I have this major depression, it was chemical, and I can't wish it away, and I can't do spiritual work to get rid of it. I had to have medication to put it in check. So I'm driving back to Chattanooga, and I didn't mention one of the many things that I got to do, skydiving in sobriety, study the Bible for a couple years in sobriety, some things I always wanted to do that I never did because I was too busy drinking. And so here I am looking to find a gun and shoot myself, and the only two books I have in the back of my car is a big book and a Bible. Go figure. And so I'm driving through Chattanooga, and I'm in this black hole, and I barely see out of the corner of my eye, I see this license plate from somewhere up north, and it says, the license plate is MATH77. I'm like, Matthew 77? Like, there's no 77 in Matthew. I'm like, that's Matthew chapter 7, verse 7. Now, who knows? He might have been a math teacher. I don't know. But... but, you know, at 5 years sober, I was kneeling at the end of my bed praying, God, help me to know you better, because I was in so much pain, and I had prayed every other prayer I'd ever heard, and I'd worked so hard, and I was full of pain, and I was crying, and I had 5 years of sobriety. And so I just put all the other prayers on, I just said, help me to know you better. And because my first sponsor had said, you know, sobriety is a series of surrenders, and that was another big one. And so I'd been studying for 2 years, and and I see a license plate. And, you know, most people, oh, Math 77 must be a math teacher. And the first thing came to my mind was, this is Matthew. So I reached back and hit a Bible, study Bible in the back of my car, bring it out, and it's ask, seek, knock. And what hit me was, God could and would if he ever saw it. And I thought, and at that moment it said, you know, I need to seek God or I'm going to die. And so I pulled over to a rest stop. I called my sponsor. I told him I was looking for a gun again, blah, blah, blah. He said, you know, I think you have depression. I went and I sat there for about an hour, I think, praying. I went and called a doctor who used to be my grand sponsor, but he's also an addiction doctor over here. And he said, oh, yeah, you got depression, all right. And he also was a member of my home group, so he had known me for 7 years, heard my story. And so anyway, we started playing with the antidepressants, and one would work and it wouldn't work and this and that, or I'd quit taking them, and, you know. And it was a battle. But after about 6 years, I finally accepted, hey, I've got this other mental illness and it requires medication. We finally got it worked out and I feel normal today. Man, I can't tell you how much of a blessing that is, because, you know, when you're thinking thoughts like, well, I'm going to get two 45s, I'm going to put one to my heart and one to my head, I'm going to pull the triggers at the same time. I'm going to make sure I die. And, you know, I told him that. He said, damn, I never heard that one before. And I said, well, you know, if you live with this kind of pain, you try to come up with solutions. But the moral of that story is that God could and would if he were sought. And if you need medication to take care of depression, go get some help, because otherwise it'll kill you. That's my experience. I guess I got to finish up here. I have a daughter who is 20. She came to live with me when she was 15. About 17, she was doing drugs. She's very smart, very beautiful young lady. She was doing drugs, and this is another thing that sobriety's allowed me to do. I said, are you going to change? Are you going to stop? Are you willing to go get some help? No, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep doing it. I said, are you sure? We talked about it. She had lied to me about it. So she said, no, I'm going to do what I want to do. I said, okay, you have to leave. I said, this is a sober house. You have to leave. So I had to send my 17-year-old daughter out the door. And, you know, I had seen old-timers who enabled their children and they died. And I knew a few old-timers that said no, and their children made it. And I told her, no, you got to go. Just killed me. But sobriety told me that's the only chance she has, is if I shut the door and say no. And she's doing okay today. We haven't talked much. She was real angry at me. I've been calling her once a month just to say, hey, your dad still loves you. She called me back today. That's sobriety. My son, I still haven't, I don't know, it's been 10 years, but I met with my old grand sponsor a week or so ago, and I said, you know, he'll be 14 in May, and I'm thinking that, you know, the case that was open, pay child support, blah, 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 health care, they closed it. And I said, why'd you close it? Well, we don't know where she is, his mother. And so I knew something was wrong, and I, you know, I still don't know, but that was 6 months ago. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, it's time. I'm going to have to try to find him. And, you know, the kind of things that happen in AA, here I am talking to my doc and updating him, and he says, well, I know a former FBI agent in the program who'll probably willing to help you. You know, that's the kind of stuff that happens in sobriety. I just do what we do. I try to help you. I try to reach my hand out. I try to do my best. And then God takes care of my stuff. And so I don't know if I'll find him. I don't know. But, you know, I could have worked all my magic and never been able to find a former FBI agent who could say, this is how we find people. And there's been, that has happened so many times in my sobriety, I couldn't tell you. And, you know, life is just outstanding. You know, the time that I spent 4 or 5 years on my own, no dating, no this or that or the other, no, oh, that one looks like an easy pick and she's willing. You know, I didn't do any of that stuff. I said, I knew I couldn't live that way. When I worked the steps, I knew that was something I could never do anymore. And so I'll live sober. I'll trust God. And, you know, if it's time, somebody will come my way. And I heard the old timer say, when you don't need a relationship, it'll come. Oh, that's great. In the meantime, what do? You know, all that kind of stuff. Well, about 9 years, 8.5, 9 years, I was talking to my old grand sponsor again. I said, you know, I work in communications and construction. I'm in meetings all the time. I said, you know, to find a good-looking, attractive, intelligent, sane woman in AA is a struggle. I said, the ones that are, they're already taken. And I said, so what would you suggest? He's 26 years sober. He said, well, why don't you try the internet? I was like, what? The internet? Why don't I just go back to the bar? You know. But I knew but I trust him and I love him and I respect him. And I knew that he wouldn't tell me that if he didn't believe me. Because, well, I've heard some people have had some good luck. And, you know, it's in a busy world these days and people don't have time. I said, but I thought you'd be old-fashioned. You know, you go to church or something. You know? And he said, well, yeah, I probably would prefer that. But, you know, this is a different this is a, you know, 21st century. And I said, well, you know, I don't want to go to church to try to find somebody or that kind of stuff. And he said, well, try it. And he goes, you know, you're a smart guy. If you decide to try it, you'll know which one to go on. So I did. And I eventually tried it, and I met my wife. And I share that because, you know, that was another one of those contempt things, like, not me. And but I went out there with sobriety in an honest way, and I met a woman who's very spiritual. She's not alcoholic. She's non-alcoholic. She accepts me for who I am. And we hit it off. You know, we've been married almost 2 years. We've been together 4 years. I've never had an argument, never raised my voice, never second guessed it. But you know, we didn't get married until I was 10 years sober. If you told me that when I got here, I would have said, forget it, I'll die drunk. But I really wanted what you guys had. I really wanted it real bad. And I was willing to go to any lengths. I mean, anything. And I just did that. And there's been some tough times in sobriety. When there's been some fabulous times. But you know what? I have not been back to the emergency room to be put back together. I have not gone to jail. I've not cracked up any cars. I mean, I've not treated the opposite sex in anything but a decent, kind way, like a loving child of God was what my sponsor said I was supposed to do. And it's a better life than I deserve, I'll tell you that. And one of the other things I get to do is go scuba diving. I love the water. I became a master scuba diver. I've been all over the world. We got married in Australia on the beach with no shoes. And, you know, I'm kind of a do-it-my-own-way kind of guy. And we should have a great life. You know, we've got a home, and I've got a bulldog that likes to jump and crack my skull and because he loves me, and I just have a good life. You know, it's that middle of the road, boring life I wanted nothing to do with, you know, but I hated those people that had it. And I have it today. I have all the things today that I didn't know that I wanted. And it was because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I have today is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen next, but I know it'll be okay. I've been given a foundation in this program that I know I'm going to be okay. And that was my problem. I've been looking for a lot of years. What the hell's wrong with me? I'm so broken. And I just had no spirituality. And I came here, and you guys have given me stuff I didn't know existed. And now I get to come stand up here, and you guys are willing to listen to me and share my experience, strength, and hope. And my hope and prayer tonight is that I said something that might help just one person live another day and have a little hope that maybe it'll get better. And thanks for letting me be at your meeting.
I'm pretty sure I made a good choice for once. Thank you, Bill, very much for sharing your story with us.